A little bit about the future here. Right now, currently, in 2013, we have the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, as it's been called. Using the president's own words, he says today 105 million people have seen a lifetime cap on their coverage lifted, so your patients no longer face the tragedy of approaching a lifetime limit in the middle of a round of chemotherapy. What is your assessment of the Affordable Care Act? Is it something that should definitely be implemented at all levels?
There's so much unknown at this point because of the fact that the regulations for the act have not even been really written, let alone passed. So there's so much unknown with that. But what we have seen is a major shift away, as I said earlier, from the group market to an individual market, which is a huge change in the insurance world. One of the factors that led to our merger in 2005 with the Illinois, Texas, and New Mexico plans, Oklahoma merger. Massive dollars. But to be able to manage that environment and to set up the programs that they're talking about is going to be a major landscape change. But I have said for years, I'm still 100% convinced of this. I've always believed that somewhere in the Beltway in Washington, D.C., there's a little red brick building. And in that red brick building, there is a diagram on a wall of how we get to socialized medicine. And this is a huge step toward that. This is the first step, I think, toward really going to socialized medicine. And one of the factors key to that is what we've talked about with the federal employee program. When you look at the fact that the federal employee program is now the largest group program in the United States, it would be really easy for the federal government to come in and say, well, we'll just use that as a model and we'll start folding people into the federal employee program and you're in socialized medicine. Now, saying that, when will that happen? Who knows? It could be 50 years from now. But that's where I see this headed. This is just one step toward a single-payer, socialized-type medicine with the government in control of that. Now, will there be a role for the Blue plans? You bet. I think there always will be. And that's why this shift in the marketplace is really critical right now and why so many of the Blue plans are looking at merger into one bigger plan. In fact, if you look at the Blue system, when I came on board in 1980, there was 117 Blue Cross Blue Shield licensees. Today, there's 38. So the consolidation is rapid, and they're doing that so they'll have the infrastructure with which to go out here and address this bigger marketplace. So I think from some aspects, it's brought some good things to the table. When you look at being able to cross state lines and portability, it's going to bring some things to the table with automating medical records and things of that nature that needs to happen. So there's some good things to it. But we really, I don't think, understand the real impact this is going to have.
E.K. Gaylord was spinning in his grave when you were just talking
yes,
about
he was.
Finally, then capturing a point in time, because generations will listen back here. We have a special report from Time magazine, and it's Why Medical Bills Are Killing Us. It's the first time the magazine has devoted one topic to their entire magazine.
Well, John, there's a really interesting phenomenon in the health business. I used to have a little presentation I would give on health economics. I tell people you can forget everything you were taught in school on economics and supply and demand when you look at healthcare. Because in the real world, when there's a demand for something, somebody creates a business or a product to address that. In the health industry, it's just the opposite. The supply being drugs, specialty hospitals, doctor groups, doctor organizations, doctor-owned hospitals, the supply of medical care creates the demand. It's a vicious appetite because they got to fill the beds, they got to use up the drugs that they develop, and they create an appetite that's unknown anywhere else in the world. And that appetite is huge, and that demand is growing, and that's what drives the cost of this, and that's what makes this such a difficult issue.
One point here, they say, what makes healthcare so expensive? Average drug prices are sky high. The price of one Lipitor pill in the U.S. is the same as that of three in Argentina. One Plavix pill in the U.S. is the same as that of four in Spain.
You know what the most frequent prescribed drug is in Oklahoma now?
What?
Antidepressant. That's just an example.
Yeah.
20 years ago, who ever heard of an antidepressant drug?
Right. I want to thank both you gentlemen, and it was such an honor to have both of you here at the table at the same time. Ralph, what was Ron's best features? What was his best leadership qualities?
You want me to leave the room?
Well, one of the things that I look for from all of these guys, if they would do what they say they will do. He always did.
All right. And so, Ron, to Ralph.
Ralph was a great mentor. He was the type of guy that would give you an assignment, and he'd give you enough rope to hang yourself, but he'd also give you the resources that you needed to do a good job. And he was a great listener.
Very good. We've listened with enjoyment, and it's been very, very interesting to listen. And now generations will hear how this all came about and hear the voices of you two great leaders. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, John.